Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
They're back. It's the Boss
and the Gloss.
We're back
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Awesome. I'm David Gow, the Boss. Carla, great to have you back. We've got Sean Mapes behind the glass. The gang is all here.
Welcome back, Sean. Welcome back, David. Feeling good. Ready to go.
And we've got a big matchup tonight. Monday Night Football kicks off.
Oh, my gosh. The build up to this. This is too much.
Well, it is fun because you've got two AFC East teams, both of which have aspirations for the crown. The Jets went out and got Aaron Rodgers this offseason, and what a story that has been. It's interesting to me because whenever we talk Aaron Rodgers and we think about Aaron Rodgers and the way he's been greeted so warmly in New York, sometimes I see your eyes roll a little bit because you still remember Aaron Rodgers back in Green Bay, and this is a very different Aaron Rodgers, at least according to the media.
You mean Salty Darkness Retreat Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, that guy.
Yes, that's the one. That is not the one that showed up on Hard Knocks, though. So I'm going to see how long this new persona lasts.
Well, and it was fun to see John McEnroe interviewed Aaron Rodgers, and they had sort of a love fest. And Aaron Rodgers is portrayed as this sort of amazingly fun, upbeat guy, great
super
to teammates.
Supportive of Zach Wilson, all the young guys, just like he was of Jordan Love. Oops. No, he wasn't.
Maybe not.
There's that.
Well, it's just fascinating how the narrative has changed on him.
Yeah, it really has.
And it wasn't that long. I guess if I were a Green Bay Packers fan and I'm remembering the way that Aaron Rodgers sort of tormented the team and was frustrated with everybody
at
the team.
Really the last 3 years.
And tough on his head coaches. I remember he couldn't wait to get Matt LaFleur in. He loved Matt LaFleur, and then he didn't like Matt LaFleur. The ups and downs of his time, the tail end of his time in Green Bay, must have a little salt in the wound if you're a Packers fan looking at the way everything is coming up, sunshine, seashells, and roses over there in New York.
It's so true. If you remember, when Jordan Love was drafted with the 32nd pick in the draft, Aaron Rodgers, I mean, his soundbite the next day was, I'm not here to coach him.
That's right.
He's got to compete for the job.
Yep.
And it's completely, the script has flipped. Obviously, Zach Wilson, young guy, has not had a good season at all. And so there's no threat to him. But Jordan Love wasn't a threat to Aaron Rodgers either. So anyway, it'll be just really interesting. I can't wait to see the season play out.
Well, look, they have so much talent.
Ooh.
I mean, Sauce Gardner and, of course, Garrett Wilson. Those two guys.
And Q. Quinnen Williams. Oh, my gosh. It's crazy.
It's an amazing team in terms of talent. But the one weakness might be that offensive line.
That's not a might.
And if in fact that's the case, Aaron Rodgers is going to be frustrated. He's facing a pretty tough or a stout Bills defense, albeit they'll be without Von Miller this week. And then next week he'll face that Cowboys defense, which we saw last night.
Excited about
knows
that.
How to get after the quarterback. So Rodgers are going to have to come out of the gate ready for some tough opponents.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And hey, I mean, I guess people can change, and I'm just going to be curious to see his demeanor and how he leads that team, because I did not think he was a great leader at all in Green Bay, to be honest, especially the last 3 years.
Well, Bills, of course, one of the top teams in the league. Everybody's top five in terms of power ranking, so it's a great matchup. But what it also highlights, this Monday Night Football game does, is how strong the AFC East is. Because really, both the Bills and the Jets are certainly Super Bowl contenders. The Patriots fell yesterday to the Eagles, but they might well have won that game. The Patriots gave up 16 points very quickly on turnovers.
Yes.
And then the rest of the game, they actually outplayed the Eagles. So you can't win with two turnovers early. It's just almost impossible. Very hard to do. But Mac Jones finally showed some moxie. He was throwing the ball around pretty well. I mean, the Patriots don't have a lot of offensive weapons. Their receiving core is not elite. But the Pats defense was pretty strong against, obviously, a very credible Eagles team. And that's the Patriots. And then you've got the Dolphins, who were just absolutely explosive yesterday, Tua finding Tariq Hill all day long. And so when you look at the four teams in that AFC East, all of them have a story to tell. I think the Patriots, ironically, are the weak link of the four, but all of them are credible teams. And, you know, this is a year when the every year there's a division versus division matchup, AFC versus NFC. The NFC East matches up with the AFC East. And as a Cowboys fan, I don't like that because that means the Cowboys are going to be playing all four of those teams in the AFC East. And those are teams that are really tough.
Those are tough teams. It is hard, though. I mean, again, today we're going to do what everyone else is doing, which is a microwave analysis of week one. And there's so much more than week one. But I think what's going to be fascinating about tonight, Buffalo is the only team we have not seen because the Jets were featured in Hard Knocks. So I feel like I have seen them.
You've seen a lot of them.
I've seen a lot of them, and I loved it. I thought it was really well done. Buffalo, to me, has been almost an afterthought. I'm like, wow. I mean, they are the last team to play week one, of course. But there's been the only thing I've seen is Josh Allen peeking out of the bushes in that commercial that he does right. where the guy is watching right. the neighbor's a Sunday ticket. And you remember Josh Allen, I'm really curious to see how this works out for him this season. He really was turnover prone last year, just really had an accuracy issue, which we really were not that, but he really has come along nicely. And I feel like he took a step back last year against that Jets defense tonight. Woo, that defense is real. I cannot wait to see. I'm curious how to see if that's remedied itself and if he's gotten a little bit better with that.
Yeah, when you talk about that Jets defense, I just, my eye always goes to Sauce Gardner.
How can you not? I think he's the best corner in the game right now.
When
I'm
used to, that's a huge statement, but it might all be true because I mean, it's a huge statement because, look, he was just a rookie last year, and he made such an impression as a rookie. But he's got every physical tool, and he's been well-coached, and he's just off to the races.
He's off to the races. And, you know, you look at the Jets team that has the offensive rookie of the year in Garrett Wilson and the defensive rookie of the year in Sauce Gardner. I mean, that's worth tanking for. They didn't do it on purpose. They tanked at their own peril, whatever, but those two guys are the real deal. And I think what I loved so much watching Sauce last year in his rookie year, he was not intimidated. He did not back down to one single receiver that he faced. And I mean, he faced great ones. He came at all of them. It was really impressive. So I like it.
And on the offensive side of the ball, the Jets, well, they signed Dalvin Cook. And they've got Garrett Wilson. Brees Hall coming back from his knee injury. They've got some talent, and it'll be interesting to see how they decide how much to mix up the pass versus the run. Because Aaron loves to throw the ball, but he's, like most quarterbacks, usually more effective when there is a running game in play and they're actually getting consistent yardage and they can run some play action. Because if Aaron Rodgers has a running game, and he can run a play action, he can throw the ball anywhere. I mean,
yeah, he's got the quickest release. It's amazing.
He's just an amazing talent. He throws receivers open like no one I can remember. So it'll be fascinating to watch. I guess when just stepping back one more moment about the AFC East, who is it that you're – when you think about the – you watched the Dolphins yesterday. They were so explosive, and Tua had one of the best games maybe – of his NFL career.
466 yards passing.
Yeah, 466 yards passing. And some big-time throws. I mean, under the gun, fourth and four, have to convert late in the game, 4 minutes remaining, and he throws that beautiful deep pass to Tyreek Hill.
Who had 215 yards on 11 catches. What?
11 catches. I mean, it's just ridiculously good. And so
yeah, big numbers with those two yesterday.
Tyreek may be the best game of his career, and ironically, against Justin Herbert and the Chargers, and of course, everyone will remember the big debate, who should have gone first in that draft, not first overall. First overall was Trevor Lawrence, but the debate about
Herbert was taken right after Tua. Tua was taken at 5 and Herbert at 6.
That's right. And then since Herbert really has performed better thus far, or at least been healthier thus far than Tua, there's all that – those two will always be compared. And you saw them head-to-head matchup yesterday. Did they both impress you, or are you now at a place where, no, Tua's better or Herbert's better? If you had to pick one today, if you were redrafting, whom would you take?
I would still take Herbert because I've seen longer – I've seen more of a body of work because Tua has been out so much with injuries. But I was very impressed with Tua yesterday. His discipline, his release was so quick. He was extremely accurate. That is not what I'm used to seeing with him. And especially when a play breaks down or it's, you know, it's not going how he should. He responded well yesterday. And I thought, you know, that's a guy who he just strikes me as a guy who just what you brought up, the comparison with Justin Herbert always. And Justin Herbert got the big fat contract and all the things. But also, you know, Ryan Clark calling him out in not a great way earlier this year. And people doubting him, and he has done the everything he can to silence his critics. And if you're looking at, we just have a one game sample to look at. He's silenced those critics. I mean, I'm still on the sideline. I'm watching. It's a long season. It's 16, 17 games, whatever it is now. But I'm impressed with what I see, and I think his head's in the game, and he's got a fantastic coach who knows how to coach him and knows how to game plan for him.
Yeah, head coach Mike McDaniel surely has done a good job with Tua. And it was interesting after the game, this is what McDaniel had to say. He said, people were scoffing about Tua after his jiu-jitsu training.
Well, I thought that was brilliant.
And he went on to say, Tua understood the value of it and really, really, really put a lot of time into it. Jiu-jitsu has helped Tua learn how to fall better and do less damage to himself. He put time into his body. He knew exactly what he wanted, and now he's taking control. Now, that's a very different portrait than Ryan Clark's portrait of a couple weeks ago. Ryan Clark, of course, suggesting that Tua took the season off and got his body out of shape and didn't look right physically. But Tua looked really great yesterday. And I do think jiu-jitsu is a healthy thing to do.
Sure.
For no other than the reason, because you can fall in a way where your head slams, or there are ways. So I had a son who played quarterback. He was a wrestler. He was used to getting slammed but keeping his head up.
Yep.
And if
yep.
you can keep your head up off the ground and you're afraid of concussions, that's a good day.
Listen, let people hate him all day long. It's working for him.
We'll be right back. We're going to talk about the Cowboys' big win over the Giants.
Woo-hoo.
That up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and a Monday Night Football game about to kick off. It will be the Jets and the Bills, a great Monday night matchup. There was a pretty one-sided Sunday night football matchup last evening.
You had a good night's sleep last night after that.
Yes. In fact,
diehard Cowboys fan.
I didn't even have to wait until the end of the game. I mean, it was
halftime. It was done.
It was sort of done. It was
before that, actually.
An easy showing for the Cowboys left me thinking: are the Cowboys that good? Is their defense that elite, or are the Giants that inept?
I think it's both.
It may well be both.
It's not
right.
Separate. It's not one-offs. Yeah.
But you know that Cowboys defense did really stand out last night, and it highlighted something we've been talking about and predicting this season, that this defense was poised to really make a mark on the league, because they're deep at every level, all three levels, defensive line, they are so loaded. They've got strong linebackers, and then of course their secondary is loaded. The addition of Stephon Gilmore underscores.
Oh, I love that.
The Cowboys had a very, very, very good offseason to get Stephon Gilmore and to get Brandon Cooks on the other side of the ball, and both those guys had an impact. But to talk about defense, they really looked stocked, and they just dominated the Giants last night.
Well, look at these first half numbers, David. 4 sacks on Daniel Jones. This is just the first half.
Yeah.
15 QB pressures, 2 interceptions, all in the first half. 7 sacks total on the night, because one was taken away, but would have been 8. But yeah, I mean, and that's the first half alone. That defense is so fast. I think that Daniel Jones was the one seeing ghosts last night. I mean, that guy, yeah. They just ate him for lunch.
Well, it was
embarrassing.
First of all, Dan Quinn does an amazing job organizing all this talent.
Yep.
But they do have, when you think about their defensive front, obviously the edge rushers, DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons is usually on the other side. Those guys are impressive. But they've also got Dorrance Armstrong, Sam Williams, Dante Fowler, all of whom know how to rush the passer from the outside. And then tonight, last night, their defensive tackles showed up. And, I mean, Osa was great. Jonathan Hankins does a great job with the run stopping. And then Mazi Smith, he got on the field. He was their first-round pick at defensive tackle. He got on the field. Not much of a big night for him. He's really a run stopper. He's not going to be a highlight reel kind of guy like Micah. But that that front is really impressive. But when you go when you talk about their speed, one of the things they do, and this is a Dan Quinn thing, but they almost never play three linebackers. They've always got two linebackers and extra D-backs. And they use their safeties like linebackers. So guys like Javon Kearse are down in the box all the night. And that Malik Hooker, he was often down there. Bell was down there. Thomas was down playing around in the box. So you've got versatile guys, safeties playing at linebacker, which adds to the whole speed of that team defense.
The speed was, especially after watching an entire day of football, I was like, wow, these guys are fast. And I mean, I watched some good defenses yesterday.
Yep.
But the Cowboys defense is so fast. I would say my favorite defenses to watch yesterday were San Francisco and Dallas.
Yeah, we got to talk about 49ers in a minute because they looked exceptional. But one thing, last thing I say about that Cowboys defense is they have some players on there that they really weren't expecting to have star. I mean, Donovan Wilson is their starting safety. He could not play last night. And they had two young safeties,
they
undrafted free agents. Marquise Bell was and Thomas. These two guys were unexpected surprises, but Dan Quinn has turned them into real players.
Dan Quinn is the quiet star behind all of this. I mean, obviously Mike McCarthy is the name on the coaching staff that everyone talks about and thinks about, and now he's taking over the OC duties. But really, I really credit what Dallas is doing with complimentary football. I mean, McCarthy knows he has an absolute star in Dan Quinn. I mean, that defense is incredible. And so McCarthy's play calling, he really kept it simple with Dak, really dink and dunk night, and that was great. He didn't need anything more. I mean, clearly from the first kickoff, it was all Dallas all day long.
Well, much has been made of the transition from Kellen Moore as offensive coordinator last year to Michael McCarthy calling the shots this year. And I do think,
Michael, you're so formal with him now.
Yeah, well, one thing I think happened with him is he looked at that. I mean, last night, Cowboys get up 16-0 before the game's even started, it seemed. And McCarthy can then call a very conservative game, and he didn't have to put a lot of pressure on Dak. There was a moment late in the second quarter when the Cowboys were up, I think, 23-0 at that time, and the Cowboys faced a 3rd-and-10, and the Cowboys were about to pass it. There were only about 21 seconds left in the half. And it was tempting to sort of try a pass and see if he could get down and score again before the half. And I'm sure Kellen Moore would have thrown the ball with a 3rd-and-10. Cowboys are still on their side of the field, though. Mike McCarthy went the conservative route. They handed it off. They punted it away. The half ended. But it was a more conservative posture. One, you can do it when you're in the lead. But two, it may be the new Cowboys offense that recognizes they've got an elite defense and the best complementary way to win will be to play more conservatively on offense.
Well, it's so true. And if you look at Dak's numbers, he was 13 of 24, 138 yards. That's very pedestrian. It's normal. He didn't need anything more than that. So why? And especially, as you noted earlier when we were talking in our pre-production meeting, I mean, Dak didn't really play the preseason at all. So why do that? It wasn't necessary. It was a beautiful, clean game. And the Cowboys get to go away smiling where Giants fans reminded me of the Cowboys fans that were in the stands the last game of the season that was so bad. The Giants fans, now it was the Cowboys fans celebrating,
yes,
and Giants fans just looking. Because here in the offseason, they gave Daniel Jones 4 years, $160 million. Good Lord. I mean, let's go back to the NFL draft in Nashville. You and me sitting together. Remember that tent when that number 6 pick came in from the Giants, and Dave Gettleman took Daniel Jones.
Daniel who?
We looked like we'd seen a ghost.
Yes.
And while he did have a better end of the season last year with a lot of injuries and all of that, that tiny little sample size that looked like a small improvement for Daniel Jones would never have given me $160 million of confidence in him. And so That's on the Giants, honestly.
Oh, as a Giants fan last night, there was almost nothing you could hang your hat on and feel good.
Where was Darren Waller?
Nothing.
They got the best tight end in football next to Travis Kelce from Las Vegas. I never even saw anything except his sad face on the sideline. They could do nothing.
I mean, on paper, you look
at,
there's Darren Waller. There's Saquon Barkley. Why can't they put stuff together?
They've got pieces now.
Mm.
That was a sad statement for the New York football Giants. Man, oh, man.
And the one thing that gave me hope for the Giants coming in was that they look like a better team under Brian Daboll.
Sure.
That, I mean, he is a good coach by everyone's estimation.
Yes.
The stuff he did with Josh Allen at the Bills, he took Allen from one level to a whole nother level.
Right. His accuracy got better. And remember, we talked about this in the opening. I mean, Daboll was with the Giants last year. What happened to Allen's accuracy last year?
Yeah.
It's not an accident.
Allen was a much better quarterback under Brian Daboll.
Mm-hmm.
And then Daniel Jones was a better quarterback under Brian Daboll last year.
Sure.
But last night, there's just nothing you can say. Oh, this was our one little silver lining or one positive for the Giants. It was a complete beatdown.
There was no positive. And I think I credit the speed of the Cowboys defense. But what the Giants and Daniel Jones need to realize is if you want to win at a level that is worth $160 million that you just paid that guy, you have to be ready for fast defenses and you have to be ready for quarterback hits and you have to know what to do. You're not going to have a clean pocket all the time. Figure out what to do with it. You get that kind of money. You went to Duke. You're smart. Do something with it.
Mm.
Ooh, man, he looked lost. Well, lost.
I have to make a little dig at all the coverage around the Trey Lance trade because, of course, just 2 weeks ago, the Cowboys were a disaster. They traded for a third-string quarterback, and they gave up a fourth-round draft pick. And what is Jerry doing, and how are the Cowboys going to handle this? And, oh, my goodness, they actually are going to lose Will Grier. What are they going to do without Will Grier? Will Grier is now in a practice squad for the Bengals. But that was the narrative out there. How could the Cowboys trade for Trey Lance and dump Will Grier out of the market? As I said 2-3 weeks ago, I said, once this season starts, people won't be talking about Will Grier. They won't be talking about Trey Lance. They're talking about how the team performs on the field. These were non-issues, and yet everybody wanted to talk about Will Grier and Trey Lance. Anyway, I'm glad that's behind us. Trey Lance.
For now.
Well, if the media can find any way to work
they
will come back to it. But Will Grier, really? I mean, that was a hot topic because he was Dak's friend. You can't cut him. Nonsense.
I know. It's so tricky, but you know what that did do? All that narrative. Who it helped was not Dallas. It helped San Francisco because they got to admit and they got to just repent for their sins.
Yes.
We made a mistake.
The attention was all on the Cowboys.
Yep. And once that's off their back, off they went. And we saw that yesterday. It was beautiful.
Hey, when we come back, former head coach Wade Phillips will be joining us. We're going to ask him to compare Micah Parsons to one of his former players, DeMarcus Ware. That up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line, Progressive Insurance, round out your protection with life, phone, and pet health insurance. That's at Progressive. Joining us on the Progressive Insurance guest line is the head coach of the Houston franchise in football, the Roughnecks in the XFL, and former NFL head coach of the Broncos, Bills, and Cowboys, Wade Phillips. Wade, thank you for joining us. Great to have you on.
Yeah, you bet, David. Thank you.
Well, you're on with David and Carla, and I'd love to begin by asking you about Micah Parsons and his role with the Cowboys. Oh, he was just dominant last night, and as I was thinking about this, you've had some amazing talent who rushed the passer for you, and DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller. How does Micah compare to some of the best pass rushers you've ever had?
Well, I mean, it's early in his career, but he's exceptional, I would say. Those guys you were talking about, along with Bruce Smith and Reggie White, and Aaron Donald and J.J. Watt, they all looked that good their first year, you know, and so first few years I'm talking about. So, yeah, he looked like that kind of talent, but it's still about longevity, how long you could play and be that productive. But he looks great.
Yeah, it is interesting. You just surfaced up some names I'd forgotten about. I mean, J.J. Watt was just amazing here in Houston. And then, of course, Aaron Donald and what you did with the Rams. But go back. So when you look at those guys, I know it's like you're asking me which child of mine I love the most.
That's right.
But you know, I want to ask you, how do you look at those guys? Who's the best, or how do you stack rank them, or was one or two of them exceptional especially? Is there anyone you'd call out or highlight the most?
No, well, I mean, you know, you're talking about a Hall of Famers. And then, you know, I coached Elvin Bethea with the Oilers in the Hall of Fame, you know, Curly Culp in the Hall of Fame, you know, Dr. Doom. So, you know, they're great in their own right, and they're in the Hall of Fame in their own right. So, you know, I don't want to give a guy a Hall of Fame too early, but he's certainly talented, a really talented player, and utilized his talent. So, but I was with DeMarcus this year when he went in the Hall of Fame again, and you know, he's a special guy.
Well, Wade, I think you helped make him a special guy, so I hope you take some credit for that. I'd pat you on the back if you were right here, that's for sure. Wade, I wanted to ask you about one of your former teams in the Broncos. So they've got all kinds of newness going on. Sean Payton taking the helm there, trying to turn around what was a disastrous season for Denver last year, giving up so much for Russell Wilson, and just nothing went their way. Yesterday they didn't win. It was a close game, of course, against their division rivals, the Raiders. How do you feel? Do you think Sean Payton is the guy that can turn this around? And obviously, before even taking a snap, we've heard a lot from him that Russ is not a politician, stop kissing babies. How do you feel about this approach, and is this something that's going to work in Denver?
Yeah, I think his track record is great. I mean, you know, he's been at the Saints a long time and won a Super Bowl. You know, nobody else has done anything like that. So, I mean, he's got a proven record. And playing against him, he's a great offensive coach as far as schemes and personnel utilization and things like that. So I know firsthand against him that he gives you a whole lot of problems with how he handles his personnel and how he utilizes his personnel. So, yeah, I think he'll do well. And they've got a good defensive squad, so. Yeah. You know, so, you know, last time I was there, we had a pretty good defense, and we won a lot of games. So I still think you can win a lot of games, but defense also.
You know, clearly, I think that's very true and good. I hope you're right. I'd like to see Denver make a big turnaround. That was a rough year last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a win or lose business. You got to win or else. So, but it's 32 teams trying to do the same thing. So, how about them Cowboys, though?
How about them Cowboys? Yes. We're talking to former Dallas Cowboys head coach Wade Phillips. So, what was your reaction to that dismantling of the Giants? And that was a very stout performance by the Cowboys defense. What was your take on it?
Well, I think defense. Defense, it took a long time, I guess, to some of my stuff to work, but it seems to be working now. So,
well, let me ask you about that, because Dan Quinn...
I'm kidding.
No, we're giving it to you, Wade.
We'll
you
give you it all,
it.
Yes.
Yeah. You just need to take it. You've got too much humble pie. We're working it over here for you.
It took 10 years to get it going better, but it really went well. Dan Quinn is a great coach.
Well, I'd love to, yes, because he moves pieces around a lot, and he loves to get after the passer. He's got lots of pass rushers, which you always develop great pass rushers. When you look at what he's doing on schematically, defensively, how do you evaluate it?
Yeah, I think he's an outstanding coach, and part of that is utilizing the personnel. Some people are stuck on scheme so much that they don't utilize their personnel, and Dan Quinn does a great job of utilizing his personnel and get, you know, I like those people that attack, and he's an attacking coach.
No question he is. One thing that we were wondering about and thinking about, your track record, your long, great history in the NFL, and, of course, your father's great, long trajectory in the NFL. Today's NFL is a different league than when your father was coaching. What would Bum Phillips think of today's NFL and the rule changes that protect quarterbacks and the lack of the running game?
And so much DPI or all of that.
All the changes, yeah. and even the devaluing of the running back position. I'll be curious, what would Bum Phillips say about today's NFL?
Well, he adjusted with everything. So, he coached a long time and had to adjust to football and what was happening. So, that's why he was a good coach, because part of it was adjustment. Another part, he had a great rapport with the players, and they played hard for him and played as hard as they could. So he got a lot out of the players. So I don't think it would be a big difference, but without an Earl Campbell, it'd be a little tougher.
Yeah, he was his special one, no question. All right, so tonight, another one of your former teams, the Buffalo Bills, featured on Monday Night Football, playing the Jets. What are you going to be looking for in the Bills tonight?
Everybody's going to be looking at Rodgers, number one, how the Bills play against him. But, they're a pretty solid team. They're right there. They've got offense and defense is good and special teams. So, they're a top-caliber team. That's be interesting. I'm looking at the Jets to see what they can do and kind of turn it around there. So, it'll be interesting to see that matchup.
How hard is it to take a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers and plug him into a new team and a new surrounding and just make sure that everybody sinks?
And a very young team.
Yeah, it's a young team, but, of course, Rodgers is not young, and so that's an interesting connection. What do you think? How do you think he fits into that locker room and will fit onto the field with them?
Well, his talent is going to be the key. I mean, he's so talented that, that's where the difference. He's a difference maker at a position that makes a difference, the quarterback. So, we played against Favre when he played at Minnesota, and he played great at Minnesota after playing with the Packers for so long. So I wouldn't be surprised that Rodgers played really well.
We're talking to former head coach of the Broncos, Bills, and Cowboys, Coach Wade Phillips. Now, you're the head coach of the XFL's Houston Roughnecks. How have you enjoyed the experience in the XFL?
Oh, it's great. Yeah. It's a great experience for me. It's coaching for me, so I get to coach, which I love to do, and be with the players and the coaches and just football itself. That's what I've done for, most of my life. So, it's enjoyable. I love it, and I appreciate them giving me the opportunity to coach.
Coach, where do you live now? Are you in Houston, or are you living elsewhere?
No, I live in Houston. Yeah, Houston's home, so we've got a place here. They asked me if I wanted to coach in the XFL, and I said, where? And they said, Houston. And I said, you got it.
Well, it's a great for – I'm glad you felt it was a great opportunity. It's been great for the Roughnecks to have such a prominent figure coaching in the XFL with Houston Roughnecks. It just seems like a great fit.
Well, it's been a great fit for me. I know that.
Well, he's Coach Wade Phillips. Coach, we really appreciate your joining us and all the insights, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
You bet. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, Wade.
Good job.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
And this is the moment we've been waiting for. Howard Balzer joins us. I know at least Carla has been waiting on him, as she loves that voice. Howard, welcome to the show.
Bring it in, Howard.
Carla, it's great being with you. Thank you very much.
Oh, listen to that voice. Just not.
There it goes.
She always blushes whenever you come on.
But I didn't blush when we met at the Super Bowl this year.
No, you didn't.
I kept my composure.
I'm expecting a little different greeting in Vegas.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I mean, yeah. So
I might have to be a little shiny.
Away.
You know,
yes,
got to bring the bling.
Absolutely.
Well, you know that Carla is the world's greatest Raiders fan, and so it'll be like coming home when you go to the Vegas Super Bowl this year.
I mean, I've had so many homes as a Raider fan, I can't keep them all straight.
There is that.
Well, they've been everywhere.
Yeah, joining us here on the Progressive Insurance guest line is the great Howard Balzer. He's a Hall of Fame voter in the NFL, and he also covers the Cardinals. So I would love to ask you, while we talk about the Cardinals for a minute, just were there any positive developments out of that loss? A tough loss yesterday, and I would love to see, did you see anything positive out of that game?
Well, the defense was very positive.
Yep.
And I don't,
some good
sacks. You know, yeah, exactly. A lot of people are saying if anything on this team, the defense might be the worst thing about it. And I always, during the preseason, pushed back against that for this reason, because I had a lot of questions. Everyone was saying, well, the offense. So I think the offense will be pretty good with the skill people they have. Yeah, but the quarterback was the big question. Defensively, you could see what their plan was, putting together a group that gets after it. It plays with passion, aggressiveness, things like that. And they surely did that. They had some hiccups in the first Washington touchdown drive when there were two personal fouls in there that gave them 30 yards and helped lead to a touchdown. But after that, it was pretty darn good. And the Commanders only averaged 3.8 yards per play during the entire game. The offense for the Cardinals was worse. They averaged 3.6 yards per play, had 14 negative minus yardage plays in the game. They only had 58 plays. So 14 negative yardage plays, that's over 24%.
Yeah, I was going to say that's about a quarter of the plays. Yikes.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't good. Josh Dobbs, you give him a little bit of a pass because he'd only been with the team for 17 days and had five practices before this game.
Yeah.
But it was the team that put him in this position. And I guess we'll find out in time whether they overrated him and didn't realize what they were getting. But, I mean, heck, this is a quarterback who's been in the league since 2017, had only started two games before this year, and those were at the end of the season last year for the Titans when he had a critical fumble on a sack late in the game against Jacksonville with 3 minutes to go that was recovered for the winning touchdown. Otherwise, the Titans are going to the playoffs. They were winning in that game. And then yesterday he had two fumbles, led to points, and just at bad times. And so you just, for his sake, you hope that it's the turnover issue that doesn't continue, because that looks to be a big question with them. And you know, 0-for-2 in the red zone, and had to settle for field goals, including a first drive of the first half when they put a nice drive together and then sputtered at the end of it and kicked the field goal. And here's an amazing number. After that, the Cardinals had five possessions in the game and ran 23 plays for a total of 35 yards.
Yeah.
I mentioned the minus yardage plays. In two of those possessions, which were three and out, the total yardage in those possessions was minus yards. And at one point, they actually had five consecutive plays in the third and fourth quarter on two separate possessions. Five consecutive plays that went for minus yardage. So that's,
okay, you know what that, can
that's
make
a real
Arizona
question.
Better? Play the Giants.
Well, we'll see.
I think that's the only team that had a word. Although, you know, Sam Howell had two turnovers yesterday, too. I think yesterday was such a – it's a week one microwave analysis, of course, but I think there weren't a lot of super clean games yesterday. And you've got Jonathan Gannon coaching his first game as a head coach. I mean, how much growing pains do you give to that performance yesterday for Jonathan Gannon as well?
Well, there are growing pains. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you learn not only for players but for coaches. They had two coordinators in their first year as coordinators. They have a lot of coaches on the entire staff that are in their first year in the NFL. They actually have and I'm not counting quality control and all those guys, of all the position coaches, they have nine, counting the coordinators, they have nine coaches that are in their 30s. And so it's a young team, it's a young coaching staff. And so what you hope for is that there is that growing together, you know, that will occur.
Sure.
But at quarterback, there's a huge question until Kyler Murray comes back from his injury.
And when is Kyler supposed to come back?
Well, that's the big question. It was one of the reasons, quite honestly, that I questioned when they acquired Joshua Dobbs on August 24th and 4 days later cut Colt McCoy. Mm-hmm. And they were basically saying Joshua Dobbs is going to be our starter, which was pretty incredible because the only other guy is the rookie fifth-round pick, Clayton Tune. And so here's how
at
it relates.
U of H, yeah, right here.
Yeah, here's how it relates to Murray. Because when he comes back, he has to miss the first four games of the season. Then when he comes back, when they decide he's able to practice, there's 21 days that he can practice before you have to make a decision on him. Well, here's my question. When he comes back, the season's going on. You've got two quarterbacks that haven't played much in the NFL. How do you give Kyler Murray practice snaps in a new offense when you've got to get the other guys prepared with the game plan for that week? If it was Colt McCoy as the starter, who's had a lot of experience. Now, granted, he hasn't started a huge number of games, but, boy, he's been a part of a lot of practice and a lot of game prep. You could afford maybe to give him a few less snaps in a week to get Kyler Murray out there and run around and do some things. So I don't know how they're going to handle that whenever it is that he returns to practice.
Ooh. And, you know, sadly, we know Kyler Murray is probably not studying the playbook. That's sadly out there.
Well,
so the indication
is, and obviously all we can go on is what we see when he's out there and what he's doing, what he's been working feverishly on his rehab, and what we are told. But that is, he has been very engaged with the new offense.
Good.
He realizes that this is going to be a whole new world when he gets out there in terms of the offense and being much more a disciplined offense. So I think he realizes, everyone can say, well, he's already got his contract, so what? He's a competitor. He wants to play well. He wants to win. And so I think he realizes that he has to get up to speed on this offense and study it and work at it. And on the game yesterday, I mean, he's there on the sideline with a little hearing device in his ear so he can hear the plays being called, you know, and all those things. And he's at every practice talking to the coaches, watching and all that. So I think this injury has humbled him, and it's also made him realize that how quickly it can end in the NFL. And so I think that has made him, I think, much more mature, let's put it that way.
Good.
We're talking to Howard Balzer, and speaking of the end for Kyler Murray, it's way premature, but you already hear the notion of tank for Caleb Williams. And it's striking me because, of course, the Cardinals did, quote, the unthinkable once. They drafted Josh Rosen high, cast him aside, brought in Kyler Murray. Is it viable to think that they could do that again with Kyler Murray and take Caleb Williams?
The thing with that would have to happen. And the difference with that one is Josh Rosen was still on his rookie contract.
Mm.
Kyler Murray's on that second
one.
Contract.
Yep.
And so,
and you have a different GM now, too.
Right. Exactly. And a different coach. And so the thing with Murray is, and we've heard this chat, people putting out this theory that the Cardinals aren't going to play him at all because they don't want to risk him getting injured, which would trigger some injury guarantees in his contract. Well, here's the thing. First of all, let's look at both sides. If they are as invested in him as their future that they are saying, then they want him out there this year to play and to get some time in this new offense before next season, and of course, hopefully to stay healthy. Let's just say in their mind they're saying, hey, you know what? Depends on how the draft choices work and where they pick and where Houston picks. And let's just say they're entertaining the notion of moving on from him. The only way they can make it work with his contract and with the salary cap is if he's traded, because then a new team would pick up what's left in his contract. And so he's not going to be tradable, I don't think, if he doesn't play at all this year, because what team is going to give up anything in draft choice compensation and pick up that contract if they haven't seen him play since he tore the ACL in the game against the Patriots last December?
Yeah, the great analysis. That's right. That'll be fascinating to watch as we go down the stretch. Hopefully he can get back and get some time on the field this year. Howard Balzer, really appreciate your joining us. Always great to get your insights.
Always a pleasure joining you all. Take care.
Okay, Let's talk soon.
Thanks.
All righty.
Bye.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.